On the show today, we have author Chris White talking about his latest book, Working with the Emotional Investor, Financial Psychology for Wealth Managers. So check it out. And on today's program, we have author Chris White, who wrote the really cool book called Working with the Emotional Investor, Financial Psychology for Wealth Managers. Welcome to the show, Chris.
Mike, thank you very much for having me on. It's a pleasure to be here.
You're welcome. Thank you. Before we dive into some of the book's details here, can you give us a quick overview of, I mean, we kind of get the gist of it from the title, but can you give us a quick overview of what the summary is here?
Well, there are a lot of parts to the book, but really the three basic points, the talking points, if you will, are number one, all investing is emotional.
Mm-hmm.
Number two is that there are three different personality types that I've discovered over my 25 plus years of doing this with individuals. And we can get into a lot more detail on that.
Yeah.
But those are the fixer, the protector, and the survivor. And then three is that we really live in two different worlds. And the first world is low stakes. And that's everyday life. You know, it's easy. It's sort of like rolling out of bed. It's fun. But high stakes is when we have to start making difficult decisions about what we're going to do with our capital.
Mm-hmm.
And it makes us nervous about it because potentially we could lose.
Oh, yeah.
and especially when the market starts to sell off and people don't know what end is up, that's when the high stakes really kick in.
Mm-hmm.
And the book is touches on the low stakes, but it really focuses on the high stakes because that's what investing is all about, is knowing yourself about in those high stakes situations.
So who's the target for this book? Is it wealth managers? Is it can the average consumer who wants, or the average investor, read this and get a good fix as well? Or
oh boy. So when we were writing the book, the publisher said, you know, you have to narrow your market. You have to narrow your market. And they said, you know, target this to the wealth advisor. But in the back of my mind, this is really for anyone who has money to put into the markets. Of course, it's useful for the advisor because the advisor needs to know about themselves. But it is also very much written for the person who has investable money, and that can be, you know, $10,000, $100,000.
Mm-hmm.
The $10,000 amount means everything to someone who has only $10,000. Those high stakes kick in whether you've got $10,000 or $10 million or $10 billion.
So why did you write it? Were there what pain points were you hearing out there that kind of prompted you to do so?
People screaming and jumping off of windows.
Exactly. Everybody kind of wants an inside scoop on how to invest. Come on.
So I think, you know, I've been through a couple of recessions. That 94 recession, it wasn't a real recession, but it was close.
Significant enough, yes.
Yeah, the 01 recession, and then, of course, the big mother or father, the 08, 09 recession. And you get to see some classic behavior types. And I just, you know, I wanted to put something together because it just kept resonating in my mind about this emotional aspect. And I was fortunate to work with a psychologist right across the Charles River here, mm-hmm. from me in Cambridge, who had developed a lot of working models. He was so famous that he, or well known, that he was called into Houston after the Challenger disaster to help them straighten out their decision-making process.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
Talk about high stakes.
That's about as high as you can get right there.
I mean, we have liftoff and then, oh my God.
Mm-hmm. Remember that like it was yesterday, unfortunately. Hey, so let's get back to the book here. Let's talk about a few details here. So you talked about the three personalities. Let's talk about those for, because since you brought it up, because the three person. Well, I think this obviously explains a lot of us, including myself, so who's very paranoid about investing, because I think I'm more of the protector type of person. I don't want to lose my money type of thing. So let's talk about these for a couple of seconds here.
Yeah. So, and I'll just cite some examples of people that we all know that maybe it will be helpful. But, you know, the first one, the fixer can be very charming and outgoing and self-assured in low stakes. But in high stakes, they become controlling and they have to win. And for them, winning is everything.
Mm-hmm.
And so one might think of perhaps Mr. Trump as being an example of a fixer.
Okay.
Even to the point, and I'm not saying that this is a quality of Mr. Trump's, but even to the point of perhaps cutting some corners to win, you know, it's okay. That is classic fixer, is to lose sight of some of those morality issues. The protector is obviously very caring and nurturing in low stakes. As they get into moving up the scale into high stakes, they become anxious. And in fact,
that would be me. Oh my gosh.
Don't worry, I'm also a protector. Okay. So, muy simpático.
Indeed.
So, in high stakes, we tend to lose it. We get very afraid. And so, whereas the fixer, when the market is sold off, is likely to want to double up. The computer just said it has to restart. I just dismissed it. I'm sorry.
Well, okay, we're good.
The fixer, when the market sells off, may very well want to be risk seeking, and they're likely to double up, especially if it's a chance to get even or get ahead. You know, they're all about getting even, getting ahead. Whereas the protector, when the market sells off, they're likely to want to sell everything because they can't stand the pain anymore.
Mm-hmm.
And then the survivor is sort of a very interesting personality. They tend to be very cause-centric. They tend to very much believe in what they've dedicated their lives to. And this could be a type of investing, or it could be a nonprofit that they've invested in and committed to, so when things start to get tough and get into high stakes, they just sort of burrow in. You can think of someone like Ernest Shackleton, who had to go through incredible odds, but he believed that he would survive,
mm-hmm.
And get to the port to save his men.
Gotcha.
So the survivor in the dark side starts to abandon people around him, even those he loves, in pursuit of this cause that he believes in. So I've seen all, whereas the fixer is risk-seeking and the protector is risk avoidance, the survivor tends to be risk indifferent.
Cool.
So you think of a funny little image that I like to think of sometimes is, you may remember the story about the frog being put in the saucepan in cold water on the stove, and then you turn the heat up and the frog will jump out.
Mm-hmm.
If the water is hot and it's already boiling, you try to put the frog in, he will jump out.
Right.
But if you put him in cold water and turn the heat on and let the temperature gradually rise, the frog won't know that he's in trouble. and he will stay there until he boils to death.
Yeah.
Well, that characterizes the survivor in many times. And so the advisor's role in all of these is to help them deal with their blind spots.
Mm-hmm.
And counter them and say, with a survivor, you know, you really need to get out of that pan. You really need to, you know, sell a few of these stocks that are high beta and very risky.
Yeah.
And get into something more conservative.
Well, they can be an objective point of view for that person, you know. So where I mean,
exactly.
they're kind of removing themselves from their their mind, I guess, for lack of a better term. And say, hey, you know what? You're not doing some smart things here. Let's get out and do this.
Right. Gotcha. Or with the protector, you know, it's funny. Sometimes the protectors don't feel the amount of pain necessary to decide to sell everything until the very bottom. They're often the canary in the coal mine.
Oh, okay.
And I can think of any number of protectors who called me in February, you know, January, February, and March of 2009. Say, get me out. And, you know, the advisor's role is to say, no, now is the time to be thinking about being a fixer and doubling up.
Mm-hmm. Hang in there.
Right.
Yeah, yeah.
So, whereas the fixer is very likely someone who will try to catch a falling knife as the market continues to descend and the advisor has to, you know, hold him back and say, no, now is not the time. The market's not cheap enough. You know, whatever the message is. So, you know, how does this apply to the individual who is out there investing their own money because they don't have the advisor? Well, the role of the book is really to help us identify who we are. And so, you know, as you read through the book, you can try to begin to figure out who you are. Are you a fixer, protector, or survivor?
Mm-hmm.
Then begin to recognize the traits in yourself so that you use those as tools. So if you're a fixer and you know that you like to jump in,
mm-hmm.
you know that's a weak point for you, and so you know you need to somehow step back away from your tendency to double up and be more careful.
Self-awareness.
Self-awareness, yep. That's it.
Yeah. From the credit union or the bank's perspective, because they all employ investors and they help people invest their money and stuff like that, I mean, this is obviously an ideal book too. So what are some of the biggest mistakes that a wealth advisor can make in working with their clients? You know, for a bank, it would be their customers. For a credit union, it would be their members. So what would be a couple of, real briefly, what could be a couple of their mistakes?
Excuse me while I'm hitting the water again.
It's okay.
I would say from my experience, the biggest problem is that we advisors don't listen. And this is really covered in the last chapter of the book, which is on servant leadership.
Mm-hmm. Ah, love it.
And so that, you know, and there are about, I think there are 10 different qualities of servant leadership that are so important. But the first one that I mention in there is listening. And so we advisors, since we tend to think we know it all, go into the meeting saying, hey, you know, this is what you're supposed to do. And this is what you need to do. And just sign, you know, the ticket and we'll get the trades done.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's really not appropriate. What you need to do is to spend a lot of time getting to know the client, especially in the light zone, where, you know, before things start to go crazy in
right.
the market. You want to build that relationship so that you know what the values are of the client,
mm-hmm.
what makes them tick, what's important to them. And then you can come into the room knowing that about the client so that you can really work with them and come up with something which is really puts their interests first. And that is so important in this world that and it's sort of the fiduciary duty, if you will, that we operate in the client's interests, not in our interests.
Right. And that leads me to my next question is like, what are some essential tools for advising or mentoring or guiding the investor clients? What are some things that we should do? What are some things that we can use or a wealth advisor can use?
Oh, well,
kind of the flip side of what you just talked about.
Did I tell you about my book?
Oh, there it is. There it is, the one tool you need. So are there like a couple of tools that can be used here to help out?
Well, the book actually, I mean, I'm being a little facetious, but the book has a lot of references in there of different materials that you can use. And there are lists of questions in there that you can consider asking the client to help. And what you're really wanting to do is to sort of gently ask the client to peel the covers back a little bit and so they describe more about what's important to them. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Family stories are so essential in uncovering a lot of these things. And, you know, I don't want to sound too psychology-like, but there's a whole history to this concept of being an investment counselor.
I can imagine, yeah.
And so that, you know, you're really as you're being invited in a very honorable position, mm-hmm. of being the counselor to the family, and so you want to be listening with a great deal of attentiveness to these stories and what makes the family tick, what's important to them. Mm-hmm. And the book goes through a large number of suggestions in terms of approaches and tools, not all of which are in the book itself, but are referenced on the outside.
Well, so, it's trust building too, right? Because you want to be able to develop. I mean, it's obviously a relationship, and then there's trust after that, and then to trust this person to make the proper decisions for you professionally, because this person, the advisor, knows is a bit more well versed in this area than most. So you want to have that element of trust there, certainly.
Definitely, definitely. I mean, that's, you know, the concept of being a trustee for a trust, mm-hmm. says it all. Mm-hmm. That you are being invited in to be. You have to be trustworthy, mm-hmm. and people will put a tremendous amount of reliance on you in terms of your advice, and you need to be very careful about what it is that you say, and it really needs to be thought of in terms of these personality types and who all is in the room with you as the advisor.
Indeed. Yeah, I mean, anytime you're dealing with money, as you well know, I mean, whether it's, you know, it's buying something, investing in something, or saving with something, it's all very emotionally driven. So, I mean, I think your book just sounds like it just nails it right on the head with this stuff.
Well, thank you.
You're welcome.
But no, I couldn't agree more. I couldn't agree more. It is. And, you know, it's not, and when you say emotionally driven, you know, some people say, oh my God, you know, I'm not going to start welling up in tears. But, although I've certainly seen that with clients, you know, it's just that it gets to the gut and to the heart. Mm-hmm. And, you know, a very important question for many people, whether they are the investor, you know, the client themselves or the advisor, mm-hmm. is to ponder the question, what is the purpose of this money?
Right.
And that is that's a very opening type of conversation to have. And it should very directly lead to all sorts of issues surrounding values and feelings and emotions.
Indeed, indeed. All right, to wrap up here, Chris, where can folks pick up the book and discover more and more detail? I mean, I'm assuming Amazon, we can put that link in the show notes. Anywhere else that we can grab it? Swing
well,
by your house and knock on the door and get one?
Yeah, that's right. Books a Million, Barnes and Noble,
okay.
And then we have just launched a new website, which I'm very happy with, called chriswhiteauthor.com.
Oh, cool. Okay, cool.
Yeah,
check that out too.
Please go to that because it has some white papers that we're just finishing up on, and a lot of additional material. So, please check that out.
Okay, yeah, and we will put the link in the show notes too, so people can get right to it and check it out as well. Very nice.
Wonderful, Mike. Wonderful.
All right, Chris. Well, thank you so much for taking time out of your busy day to chat with us about your book. And again, it sounds like it hits the nail right on the head when it comes to emotions and money. They go hand in hand. Big time.
That's right.
All righty. Everybody out there, Chris White, working with the emotional investor.